You guys all right?
I don't know. We got a deep sigh and oh, boy, from Sam right as we went to air, and I was momentarily concerned.
You good, Sammy?
All good, boys.
All good. You know why? It's game day.
Game day.
Welcome into the Real Kipper and Bourne program. This is our Leaf Hour edition. I'm Nick Kyprios. He's Justin Bourne. He is a very good and eager Sammy McKee.
Let me stop you real quick.
Yeah.
Which hour is this?
Leaf edition.
It's the Leafs hour. Yeah. So we're going to talk about the Leafs.
You get your shorts in a knot, eh, with social media?
No, because my shorts aren't in a knot. No,
they get
there's
you.
Some knotted shorts
there
out there.
Are some knotted shorts out there, correct.
Anyway, carry on.
But that's okay. They'll figure it out. I think by January, they'll figure out that our first hour is a Leaf edition. Our second hour is the National edition.
By our
coast to coast.
We'll be there.
All right. You guys ready?
Ready. Nice suit.
I look pretty good, eh?
You look fantastic.
My, what's going on? Shout out to Hershey at Blue Industry because this looks pretty good right now.
That's what was really nice. Is that new?
It is new.
It's beautiful.
Yeah,
it is.
Like when you walked in today, like, I can just tell. He's got this suit. He's got the ring on.
The monocle.
If we can go to the one shot on Kipper, get the hand up a little bit. Get the hand
Mr.
up.
Mr. Peanut
get
comes
the hand
in with
up.
His top hat
we got
on.
We got an event at Queensway for Mercedes-Benz today. I'll go there. But a late start, a 7:30 start, kind of rare. I'm thinking maybe I can cover both tonight.
You're going to go to the Leafs game?
I may. With a 7:30 start,
wow.
I may end up at the game tonight.
Nice.
Well, Gardner, you should be there by.
You got a helicopter
by the third period.
I was gonna say, by you know,
do Mercedes fly?
If it goes to overtime, you would have a chance to see some of it.
Yeah.
Anyways,
all right, we got a fun show today coming on in about half an hour. The president of the Los Angeles Kings, Luke mm-hmm. Robitaille. We've had him on before. Always worth a few good laughs with Luke. And then in the National Hour, we're gonna welcome in another familiar face, Ray Ferraro.
One of my childhood memories of my dad being in the NHL is my dad's retirement party from the Kings and Luke Robitaille playing soccer with my brother and I in a field nearby. It's like one of my, you know, I was 6 years old, but Luke was cool enough to play with the little kids, so I got a lot of love for him.
Oh, okay.
Nice. Yeah.
Toronto Maple Leafs right back at it. Take on a Los Angeles Kings team, and we'll get into this with Luke and what we can expect out of his hockey club without Drew Doughty, who went down during the preseason, is not expected to be back for a few months. But it was not a great game for them the other night in Ottawa. Maybe we see a tighter team. And, you know, the Leafs seem to be growing now since their initial loss to Montreal.
Yep.
But there seems to be some momentum on the Leafs side now.
I would say so. You know, they feel pretty good about the direction they've been going. The defense has been shored up nicely. Lilligren's going to come in tonight, which is good. And yeah, no, they've looked good the last couple of games, and even the Montreal game wasn't that bad. So, good start.
Yeah, and after a ferocious start to the season where they play Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday, it's been a while since they've played a game of hockey here. So,
yeah,
you're going in, you're rested against an opponent that had a wild game on Monday night on a road trip. It's a good spot for the Leafs, it feels like, to kind of impose their will. But, you know, in years past, the rest versus rust with the Leafs team and expecting to beat a team, that's gone the wrong way sometimes. So we'll see how they do tonight.
So you saw me coming in with my blazer and forming an opinion. Uh-huh. I also have an opinion. When I saw your face, it looked a little more cheerful. Could it be because Craig Berube spoke a little bit longer for us today?
I thought I was going to say because I was wearing my amulet today. I thought that's why you thought I was smiling a little brighter.
Are we doing it already?
So, okay. Okay, you threw something out there.
All right.
Get it off your chest right now.
I don't know where to go with this.
This has to do with John Tavares endorsing a product.
Listen, I don't know where to go with this. I'm not well enough informed. I've just been making a lot of jokes and reading a lot of jokes. I'm enjoying it. It protects them from Wi-Fi. Okay. I don't know. You know Butterborny. You explain it.
So just to be clear here, John Tavares is endorsing a product out there that Sammy's trying to explain to me has to do with radiation from Wi-Fi or like what, Sammy? Please, enlighten us.
Yeah, that's the idea. And they're, you know, it's one of those things where it's not doing any harm, but it is one of those things that is some people are making fun of because, I think the website says, you know, I think it taps into some people's fear of like, what's all this Wi-Fi doing? And it's supposed to protect you from that. You know, I'm hearing in my ear, it's supposed to increase healing. One of the things says helps with your thoughts, which I don't know how you research. So it feels like a kind of a junk science-y type of thing. Okay, Russell Brand is hawking the product.
Okay, he's a little nutty though, isn't he, Russell?
Hey, he's selling it for $249 per amulet. You too can.
Listen, I just didn't have on my Leafs bingo board to start the season.
So you're telling
magical
me.
Amulet within the first week? I didn't expect that.
Here's what I'm telling
magical
you.
Magical amulet was not on my bingo card.
John Tavares does not have a big personality. He's a bit of a blank canvas. And I think people see an opportunity here to paint this kaleidoscope of guy who's into magic crystals or something. For the record, this product is Canada Basketball and UFC
yes.
also has partnership.
Yes.
There are people who think this stuff is, and maybe it is something. Mm. Just like my pen protects me from tigers. I've never once been eaten by tigers. I carry it everywhere.
We've all gone and tried to push some products from time to time here. Yes. Some of them have been great and home runs. Some of them you'd like to forget. But he's no different than anyone else, I guess, except maybe he's making 11 sheets, which can kind of help him comfort the fact that this thing, if it sucks and it doesn't work, is anybody going to truly remember it?
In a more serious spin on it, athletes throughout history have tried to gain any edge. And if this helps him get more sleep, or he thinks it does and they get some placebo effect from it, if it helps at all, great. And if it doesn't, what's the harm?
Yep.
I think the idea is that it's one of those things that, like, you might as well.
I have not been happy with my morning skate performances Thursday morning.
You're one amulet away.
You're telling me if I put one on each skate, it would cost me $500?
Yes.
But here's, you know, if it weren't called an amulet, it would be so much better. Right? They're just not called an amulet. Now,
the picture you did send me, though, I would say
if I've
got one knock against this endorsement for JT, just put a better picture of yourself up than the one that you just looked like you came off of practice.
It doesn't feel like something that he's been like a paid sponsor of. I feel like he just uses the product.
And listen.
And they're like, here's a guy who uses it.
If Russell Brand's company wants to sponsor me, they're magical amulets.
You
I'll wear one every day.
Amulets?
100%.
Buddy,
I'll wear one every single day.
You got on your hands and knees and begged CCM to send you skates the other day.
Yeah. Yes, I would do it again. Okay. Anything. I am for sale. So amulet companies, reach out to me. I'll wear them all.
This magical amulet from
AirTech. All right. With or without these things. With or without these things tied to John Tavares' skates tonight, he's in the lineup.
He is. I just wanted that out there so we can make jokes about it. Carry on.
Yeah. Amulets. That's it. Magical amulet's going to fix the Leafs. Is it when the cop and he's wearing
in
it?
The lineup
I got 10.
Yes,
with these things.
Yes.
Possibly Nylander is out. What's the latest here, Sammy?
We have a clip from Berube who's going to lay it all out for you in detail. Okay, so Berube, clip one, please, Derek.
It'll be a game time decision. Yeah, so see how the day goes for him. You know, I think there's improvement. So hopefully he's better later and ready, able to play.
There you go. There's the update.
You just need some quicker healing somehow.
There's only a way.
flu for him too?
Yeah. Going through the room.
Well, like, it's so early here. You don't need to drag anything in, make anybody else sick.
No, you don't. And that's always been the biggest case on a hockey team. It's not about, like, playing through it and showing you can. It's about, hey, don't get the rest of the team sick because that'll help out the team more. I do wonder
luckily,
if there's a...
I wear this magical amulet.
Oh, my God. I do think there is some pressure to show the new coach that you're willing to play through things. Is there not? Like, to show Berube, hey, I'm not just going to go away. Like, if you're Nylander, would you not feel a little bit more pressure with the new coach?
I think so. Yeah, I think everybody felt it from day one in training camp that, like, you only get one chance at a first impression, and you'd rather have him on your side than maybe behind the eight ball. Like, McMahon was really behind the eight ball, but dug himself out in the last week very nicely.
Yeah.
But I think everybody still feels like they need to be on their best behavior with a new coach.
I do too. Lines are interesting. So the top line's the same. Holmberg is going to be with Tavares and Robertson as the second line if Nylander doesn't play. Mm. So they're still giving Robertson some chance there. McMahon, Domi, Pacioretty. Lorenz Kampf-Reeves. So Domi playing center, already kind of showing himself to be versatile, playing first line wing, third line center.
Now, I would like to tell you that this is by far the most interesting Craig Berube clip of the season so far.
Oh.
Like, by far. So, if we would like to play Domi, the clip two on Domi playing center, please, Derek.
Well, he was moving really well. You know, I think he moves a lot better in the middle, you know, I would say, and moving his feet. And, you know, he's a very good playmaker. So when he gets open ice and gets some speed going, he can really skate. He's dangerous. He can make plays. And saying that, he should shoot more. He had a couple opportunities, and, you know, he passed up on some shots. So it's, you know, we're trying to get him to shoot a little bit more on his opportunities.
The pass to Nylander for the is that one of those instances?
I don't think so. But there was one after that where it was like, God, do you ever shoot it? He hates shooting. Was it preseason, the breakaway he had where he tried to pass it back through two guys?
Mm-hmm. I think he just loves to dish.
He does. Buddy loves
in a nutshell. He just loves to make those type of passes and plays. And
he's addicted to UFOs. I think that's all he wants to do. That's the whole point.
This has been him since minor hockey.
Is that right?
Yes.
Scoring junior? Just
no.
Passed?
Well, it's his first thought is to make a play, not shoot a puck, and goal scores is all I need is this much of a crack between me and the net, and yeah. I'm shooting it.
But you do have to shoot enough that people honor it. And I actually think throughout Marner's career that maybe was an early career criticism that he didn't look for a shot, and then he found it. He had a 30-goal year somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. He started to shoot the puck a little bit more. Now I don't think it's a fair criticism at all. I think he shoots it when the shot's there. Domi probably needs to find that. What is interesting from that clip, though, is all the skating stuff.
Yep.
That he needs to move his feet, and he's better moving his feet here, and he's good when he gets his feet going. And I think that's a great observation of Domi's game. When he's moving out there, he's dangerous. When he's just in the tracks and looking around for someone to sauce it to, it's going nowhere.
Is there a second clip on him playing center?
It's on getting him to shoot more.
Oh,
there's more detail on it.
Yeah, okay, let's get to that, and then we'll get our thoughts on Max.
Well, it's a habit, right? And habits take time to break. And, you know, it's just about constant reminders. And, you know, and I think in practice it's important that he's, you know, probably overshooting at times and just trying to get out of those habits.
It's like in your golf swing when you need to overcorrect in practice so you can be better on the course.
You know, it's just about constant reminders. Content. Is a nice way to put me being on you all the time about this.
I think there's an ability to work with a small percentage of getting him to shoot more. Mm-hmm. But I think just at this point in time,
habits take time.
It is what it is. And, you know, unlike sitting on the tee box, mm-hmm. getting ready to hit and then reminding yourself about the million things that you need to do on your backswing or your hips or your shoulders or your hands.
Mm.
That ain't hockey.
No.
Hockey's
need to be free up here to just play.
Free,
reactive,
and clear, and subconscious takes over.
Yeah.
Natural instincts take over. Yeah. This isn't, I got time to think about all the things that I've been told or I worked on in practice. It's got to click in. You only have a split second.
Yeah. And, you know, I would say in the NHL, probably 80% of the guys are pass or shoot. They'll take the best option. And 10% of the guys are shoot first guys. And the Leafs seem to have all of that 10%. You know, it's like Matthews and Nylander and Tavares and Pacioretty and Robertson. So to have one guy who's in the 10% of wants to pass all the time, probably not terrible. Not terrible to have a disher out there. So.
What was the number that Valley gave us on the long shots from Tavares yesterday?
149 shots in the last 2 years, I think, from distance, and unscreened.
And one went in.
One went in.
Yeah.
So might want to pass a few of those.
149. Yeah.
So just to follow up on Max at center, is there a world now where you could see possibly Max being a second-line centerman for the Toronto Maple Leafs? Could it be down the stretch or in the first round, we see Matthews and then Domi.
And then Tavares?
Third line.
Yeah. Do you like that? Because I feel like I'm about to be the guy who's going to be
asking a question with a question?
I am, because I don't want to have to be a hater. I don't like it.
For me, if there's a thought of the Leafs thinking that Max could center a second line, then once again, we're into that conversation like we were with Nylander. Give it a try.
Give Nylander a nice then.
Stick with it. Give me a long stretch where it's feeling good, and depending on your opponents as well, what the matchups are, you want a good matchup situation against the Tampa Bay Lightning, soon to be playing against, put it to the test.
Yeah.
But to answer your question that I asked with a question with a question.
Yeah.
Up until this point, the answer probably would be no, because of that's not what you signed Max for, right?
What'd you sign him for?
Versatility, depth, top nine. Mm-hmm.
A guy that
but not
has puck skills when he has.
You don't sign. Traditionally you don't sign top six wingers for less than $5 million. I mean, he wasn't brought in so he could solidify the center ice position on the second unit. So if he's going to work towards that, then give him a large stretch here to prove it.
But are we getting lost in semantics about what line is the second and what's the third line? Like, if Tavares, Nylander, and whomever is your second line, and Domi's in the middle between, tonight it's Pacioretty and McMahon, pretty good. Are you more comfortable if you call it the third line then, and he slots in better for you there?
So, I'm old school because I think that it sets a pecking order, and it does give you a sense of where you are on the pecking order, and there's something to be worked upon in terms of moving yourself up the lineup. If you just assume that you got one number one line, and that's whatever Matthews and Marner are on, and then you've got three lines that think that they can go anywhere between two and four, I'm not a fan of that.
No, but no one is going to think that a Domi line is ahead of Tavares Nylander in the second slot there. Like, that to me is pretty clearly your second line. Whether you think Tavares
it's whatever Nylander's on.
Right.
Not Tavares.
Right. Yeah, you're right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So...
If
Domi's playing with Nylander, he's on the second line.
Right. And tonight he's not. But I do think that Nyes, Domi, Nylander intrigues me like that, because then Domi has really good players to play with.
Really good.
Really good. And Matthews, Marner, whoever you want to throw on the left side there, I'd love for McMahon to find it a little bit here, getting Berube's good books a little bit, because I'm not sure who else you put in the left wing aside from Nyes higher up in the
lineup
right now.
I think the season's just warming up here.
Yeah.
I think there's plenty of time for McMahon.
Plenty of time. You good on that one?
I am.
We got Timothy Liljegren in tonight. We talked a little bit about it yesterday. Let's get to Berube and see what he has to say about Liljegren.
He has ability, right? Skating, moving the puck and things like that. And he should be a good puck mover. And it's just about him managing his game and managing his puck movement and making good decisions with it, not risky ones, and simplify. And then you got to win your battles, right? As a defenseman, it's important that you're defending well and you're strong at your net front and you're winning those board battles and corner battles and things like that. He's got to do that.
There can't be a harder job in hockey than to be a guy whose job is to be steady and not make mistakes while trying to impress to stay in the lineup. Mm. Don't try to do too much. Don't be fancy. Keep it simple, but also impress us. Mm.
You're so right. Like, yeah. It's like, what do you do?
I do think there's a better chance for him to be better, calmer, and more predictable with this blue line than others in the past, because it's been such an open-ended question mark for the Leafs the last few years on the blue line, and it's not good enough, right? It's just not good enough. And And then that presents an opportunity for four or five of those guys to go, okay, I'm going to be the guy. I'm going to step up. And Liljegren, if I'm not mistaken, had a bit of a history of being an offensive player growing up. And I think he envisioned himself to be a certain defenseman. When everybody's telling you that it's wide open, the Leaf blue line stinks, and you could be a guy, you could be a power play guy, you could be this, you could be that. Just go out there and make it happen. And it's like, no, now it seems like guys are more slotted into their roles and their expectations. And he's, if he wants to be part of this lineup, just find what you need.
Well, you did it. What's the adjustment like when you're a scorer and junior to mentally accepting a different role? How long does it take to get there?
Well, it depends on how quickly you get sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Yeah. Sick and tired of watching, being a healthy scratch in playoffs.
And just saying, waking up one day and just saying, okay, I'm going to find a way that they can't keep me off the lineup.
Yeah.
And if you bring it, and listen, it could be as simple for him as just get in your own zone. Mm-hmm. And just, like, you can skate and you can move the puck. You got to make sure you understand what play is needed at this particular time. Make a good first pass. If you got room, skate with the puck. Mm-hmm. And do not get beat to the net.
Yeah.
And that's it. Like, I'm watching, who was the defenseman last night that I watched just get roasted?
Philly? Edmonton? What team?
Vancouver? Calgary? Dallas?
No, it'll come to me.
But okay. It was, well, Kulak got roasted by Owen Tippett.
Yes, but that wasn't it. Anyways, it was, oh my God, Severson.
Oh, yeah? I didn't see
And that. It was...
it's Columbus, right?
Yes. Mm. And it was as poor of coverage I've seen in 10 years. I'll get it for you after the break and you tell me. Anyways, my point is those things cannot happen to a Severson and it cannot happen to a Liljegren.
Yeah.
Right? And that's not that hard to just eliminate the big mistakes.
Yeah.
Bad pinches have been historically his issues for a long time, but it's also been historically an issue for all Sheldon's years here. Mm-hmm. It's like, where are you going? 3 minutes left on the clock. You're up or down a goal. Where are you going?
That's always been a great observation of yours, is just a lack of clock awareness that, like, hey, we're up one here. We don't, you know, I think there is this mentality that if you shift the way you play, it's like the prevent defense in football and it's all going to come back your way. At some point, you just can't let a guy behind you for the Hail Mary.
Is there a chance here that, like, they just kind of develop him a bit more? Like, in a new system with a more defensive-minded guy, that he just comes back into the lineup with a lower role, with more guys in front of him, and he just turns into a part of this team? Like, is there a chance that happens?
There is.
There is a chance, but the odds are against it.
For sure.
Okay?
No question.
So, where are you
on that?
That's
why I asked the question.
Where are you on that? I think the best case scenario is that this guy can prove that he's cleaned up his game a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then there's some team that wants him after American Thanksgiving. And once they figure it out that their team stinks, which happens a lot between training camp and American Thanksgiving, then somebody's going to go, he's a serviceable player. He's not perfect.
Maybe the Oilers.
But I need a right-handed defenseman that can play anywhere from 12 minutes to 16 minutes. And guess what? He's it.
Yeah.
He's it.
Oh, yeah. He can do that. No problem. We have Stolar's clips as well. One thing I want to share with you guys on him, SportLogic had some stats on his goaltending going back to the 23-24 season. So all last season and the start of this year, his ranks in goals against, save percentage, and even strength save percentage are first, and first in the NHL, and he's second in inner slot save percentage.
I don't care anything about that. What I care is
you don't?
Steve Valiquette came on yesterday and gave him the stamp of approval, and all these Leaf fans are tweeting now that he's the man because Valley said he's the man.
How about how things changed for Joe Woll over a 2-week span? 2 weeks ago, right? He's like, the guy. He's 1A. To Stolarz is 1B. Here we go, 3-year contract.
I can't picture anybody else playing a big game for the Leafs other than Stolarz. Like, I'm like, they're going to put Joe Wall in? It's like, no, don't do that. Like, Stolarz to me is now the number one until Wall can earn his way back in there.
Two games.
I've seen enough.
That's why this show is the best. We just ride the roller coaster.
All right, let's get Craig Berube's thoughts on Stolarz.
I don't know. I mean, I've known him for a while, had him in Philly. This year, I think, you know, he's calm and cool in net. He's making the saves that he's supposed to and looks pretty comfortable in net and tracking pucks well. But we're doing a good job in front of him, too, which is good. We need to. And it's kind of a combination that works, you know, both ways with a goalie and higher defending in front of him.
I was intrigued by the I had him in Philly thing. I can't remember what years Berube was in Philly. But looking at some of his save percentages when he was there, Stolarz, 928 in 7 games, over 912 games. Like, he was very good there. So Berube probably thinks he's a pretty good goalie to begin with, so that's great.
What's the catch here?
With Stolarz?
Yeah. Just hasn't played? Nobody was willing to give him any money? He hasn't played any games?
Not sure what I'm
the same as all of them when they first start out. Consistency. That's all.
Okay.
There's not a whole run of games in his career where he wasn't very good, so I don't know.
I'm concerned about the catch.
It is a little funny. I'm looking at AHL. Okay, he's a 922 there. Then he's a 926 in the NHL. Then 920 in the AHL. I don't know what I'm missing.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway.
We should go because we got to get Lucky Luke on the other side.
Yeah. All right.
Okay.
Plenty more to talk about.
Lots more.
Anyways. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then we'll get to Lucky Luke.
Put your amulets on and come right back.
Luke Robitaille, one of the highest scoring wingers in NHL history, ready to join us here on The Real Kipper and Warren Show.
Glorious amulet.
Hey, it's Matt Marchese.
And I'm Mike Fiuta.
We're discussing the top stories of the day across the NHL and the hockey world, weekdays at noon.
It's the Fan Hockey Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and wherever you get your podcasts.
As promised, as advertised on The Real Kipper and Bourne Show, let's welcome in Hockey Hall of Famer, top NHL scoring left winger in history, president of the LA Kings, all the way from California, Lucky Luke Robitaille.
What's up, boys?
What's up, Lucky?
How are you?
Good. I'm doing good. How are you doing?
We're good. We're all set. The LA Kings, your LA Kings, set to play the Toronto Maple Leafs tonight on Wednesday Night Hockey. Your Kings coming off an 8-7 loss to the Ottawa Senators on Monday. And, you know, as I'm watching this, I'm thinking to myself, Lucky Luke in his heyday would have loved to play a game like that, you know, end up with 2-2 and, you know, pad those stats. But Lucky Luke, the president, I could picture watching the game feeling much differently than that.
It is so different. You're 100% right. As a player, you're like, we picked up a point. I got 2-2 tonight.
That's a win.
It's not the same when you're on the other side.
No kidding. It was go ahead. I was just going to say, it was an exciting game. Do you take some, at least away, that you guys do have this flashes of offense and there's enough positive things to take from a game like that, or is it all frustration?
You know, it's not frustration. I mean, we all know it's a process. You know, you got 82 games and, you know, we're doing a lot of new things. Like, you know, we have a lot of new players this year, so it's going to take time to adjust to from game to game. But what's frustrating, you're like, oh, man, we played so well defensively against Boston. And then the next night, there seemed to be so many holes. So you're trying to figure it out. Everybody's trying to figure out what's the best way. But it is our game. I mean, that's the way it is. The skill level in the NHL is incredible. And when guys have chance, they find a way to put them in. Now, it's you can't give up too many chances in this league because it could happen any night.
not only the LA Kings players versus the Leaf players, but two new head coaches to their respective clubs. You have Jim Hiller, they have Craig Berube. In terms of Hiller, what led you to believe that this was the guy moving forward in terms of style and play? What is it exactly that brought you to the conclusion that Jim's the guy?
I think the biggest thing for us is, you know, we had a great start last year, and then for some reason we went on this hole for 16 games. And then we look back, and when Jim took over, we basically had the same record for the last 32 games and the same amount of points as the first 32 games of the year. So, and we thought Jimmy came in and really communicated well with the players and found a way to get the most out of guys. And then we had at the end of season, a meeting with each player, and they all spoke highly of him, of the way it was. And he was way more intense than probably was perceived by people. And we liked that. And he's got some great ideas about the way to play the game. He's been around for a long time. He's had some great mentor in Barry Trotz and Babs in Toronto. So those guys, you know, they kind of helped him, becoming a great coach. And it's his first real chance, and we trust him. And there's another thing, that he's a good coach behind the bench, and we all know there's a real value to that in our game.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing that makes his job a little harder, Luke, obviously, is being without Drew Doughty, such a big part of your guys' team in the past. What does a timeline look like for Doughty? And more importantly, how do you expect to fill in, or with who do you expect to fill in to bridge that gap to getting such an important piece back?
Well, when you're missing a Drew Doughty, or, you know, it's like missing Austin Matthews, you know, yeah, or Mark for a great team, and you can't have one guy replace him. So it's going to be a committee of six defensemen playing together, playing the system. You know, it's definitely going to give Brent Clark like more opportunity on the power play. And then, you know, so he's the type of player that will want to take that chance. We know that. But you don't replace Drew Doughty. I mean, as much as people talk about his offensive game and so forth, he is still one of the best defenders in the NHL. And he was so good last year, and we're going to miss him. And I think, you know, to be fair, we'll probably expect him back around Christmas, you know, around January 1st, something. And we're not sure, because it's week to week, and we'll see. But it's going to take a while.
A leading scorer for you has been, just the growth of Adrian Kempe. And I watched him score again. And I know today with the equipment, and there's everybody's got a great shooter. Like, even fourth line guys can shoot the puck, but there's something a little extra special there. Is there anything that you've seen in Kempe that kind of reminds you of a very young Luke Robitaille?
He's way faster. Not even close. He's a really good defender, too. He plays every PK. I was nowhere near those. I thought it was politics, though, by the way. But no, he's a special player on his own. He has found a way to develop his shot the last 3 years. I give players credit. They're adjusting with the new sticks and everything. And Adrian Kempe came in our league. He wasn't really viewed as a scorer. In the last 3 years, he found a way to become a better scorer. Like, his release is different. And you give those guys credit, because they work in the offseason. And that's the reason he's done so well. He's always been a really good player. He was a center like the first few years in our league. And we put him on the wing with Kopi, and he's never looked back. But we trust him like for 200 feet, and that's a great thing. That's a great thing to have on your team, when your guy can score 30 to 40 goals and you trust him in every situation.
Luke, as you guys sort of build towards a championship, where do you see yourself in that process? The Oilers in your division, obviously very good. Vegas recently won a Stanley Cup. Canucks have had a great year last year. Where do you guys see yourself in that division, and where, I guess, where you're at in trying to get to that Stanley Cup?
Well, we're like every team. Once you get in the playoffs, we all believe we have a chance to get in. And yeah, and then, you know, things happen and so forth. But there's a learning process. It takes time. I mean, we look at Tampa Bay. It took him, I think, 10 years before they won the Cup. And they made it a bunch of years. Then they actually missed the playoffs. And then they came back up. I mean, you look at from the time Pittsburgh won in 2009, they won again with the same kind of group and 2017, if I'm not mistaken. You know, our owner asked us how long it took Colorado, and I think we said, well, when did Landeskog get drafted in McKinnon? It was 2010 or 12 and so forth. So it takes time. We don't want it to take that long, but we know there's a process to learn. I mean, it's been hard losing 3 years in a row against the same team. It's never easy. You guys know for the fan base, it's not a good thing, but we're in and we're giving ourselves a chance. This year, what excites us the most is we have four new young kids on our roster, and they're coming in. It's going to take time. We understand that. But at the same time, they have the opportunity to play with Anze Kopitar and when Drew Doughty comes back, and we have great veterans around them. And Adrian Campignano is a veteran. Philip Deneau, those are great guys for us to teach our young players to play the game. But we know in the NHL, you got to get in. And if you can get outside the first round, you got as good a chance as anyone. And that's our goal. To keep moving, the goal is you start the season, you want to win the Stanley Cup, and then see if you don't win it, like, what do you have to adjust?
I get the time and process, and no better example, I think, than Quentin Byfield as well, who's gone from being a boy to a man. But, Lucky, you ruined it for everybody, and Jimmy Carson, when you came out of the Quebec League and led the team in scoring right away. It's your fault if nobody's patient.
They called me lucky. It was a reason. It's funny, but you still don't know how to win until later. Like the first few years in the league, you're still trying to position yourself to be part of the roster, part of the team. And then sometimes you look at it and you're playing for your first big contract. And then suddenly you're like, oh, man, we really got to win. There's like even Dean Lombardi used to talk about that, and Blakey talks about it. Like there's a process to becoming a player that is doing things a little bit different. Every once in a while you're lucky and you're playing with the right players at the right time and you learn a little quicker. But there is a process. Like when you have the opportunity to play when I was younger with Mark Messier and Adam Graves and Kippy when we were with the Rangers, it's like I saw a whole different level too, you know, and I start thinking differently because then you're realizing you haven't won. It's been 8 years or 10 years and you might pay a different price to win the game that you thought was important maybe 4 or 5 years earlier because you're just trying to stay in the league.
So is it less about what you do then as an individual and more about how you come together as a team to win? Is that what you learned later on?
It's about the price you're willing to pay for the greater good of the cause. So you learn that when you have the great veterans around you and you understand like they do little things, you know, like as a fan, you don't see they chip it out of zone on a 3-2 game. They dump it in at the right time and it's 3-2 or it's 3-3 or there's no play there. You don't force it. And next thing you know, when you win the cup, you never regret it because they never ask anyone unless the guy's the MVP. What'd you do? It's like, what was the team you won on? You know, that's what people remember.
How do you feel about the evolution of Quentin Byfield? This guy looks like a guy, you know, I've heard people this, you're talking about a dark horse candidate for Team Canada in the, what's it called? The Frozen Four? That sounds
Four
right.
Nations Face-Off.
Four Nations Face-Off. That's it. How do you feel about where Byfield's at?
Because people selling the game.
I know, and it's our product, too. but he is a name that is getting talked about for that team, which is a high praise.
Yeah, he's tremendous. He's got so much energy. He can play the game at a high tempo the whole game. And, the beauty about Q is he's learning with Anze Kopitar, Philip Deneau. Those are two centers. He's learning to play the right way. He understands what it will take to win it all. But he's always played that way. And there are some guys that might get 100 points, and I'm not sure like you can win as many games as a guy that will get you 80 points. But the way he plays in all situation with his intensity. So we love the way he's playing. We understand he's still very young, but it doesn't surprise me that he's in a talk with Team Canada because of the level that he brings in and game out, and every practice the same.
And listen, Luke, I'm not asking you to go back and tell me what, you know, why it didn't work out with Pierre-Luc Dubois, but obviously the change for Darcy Kemper. I mean, was that a tough decision? Because the tendency is, when you make a type of commitment, you're in it for the long haul. But you know, and what Darcy could still bring. I know he's not in the lineup tonight. He might be dealing with you know, something minor, but just the overall thought process of flipping this quickly to get an experienced goaltender.
Well, it's never easy, but we knew we needed a goaltender for the next couple of years. We have some young kids coming up, like, you know, and we know they're going to be knocking the door. But we all know with goaltending, you got to be patient. You got to be patient with all players, but you got to be extra patient with goaltenders. So Darcy, we're familiar with him because we had him before he went to Phoenix. And, you know, Billy Rankford, our head of goalie department, spoke highly of him. So that was, it made sense for us. And at the same time, you know, sometimes situation just don't work out. You know, Pierre-Luc is still a great player. I mean, he could skate. He's an impactful player. For some reason, it was hard to play. You know, like I said, we have Philippe Deneau and Anze Kopitar coming in. It just didn't seem to mesh well. And it was one of those things where, you know, they needed a center. We needed a goalie. It made sense.
Luke, I did, in talking to you, I'm thinking about, you know, we had the Four Nations face-off come up, and we talked a little bit this morning about their goaltending. You're from a part of the world originally where we had some great Canadian goaltenders come out of, you know, Patrick Waugh and Brodeur and, you know, numerous others.
Felix Potvin.
What's going on? What's happened here where Canada isn't producing goaltenders? Like, we're likely to have, like, Binnington and Montembeau or something as our duo, which obviously they're very good goalies. I don't mean to be disrespectful to them. But it's not quite the level where you have future Hall of Famers, you know, begging to get in the crease.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, it's like getting goal scorers out of a league in Canada. You know, every year that it seems to change, or every 3 years. And, I think what was it, Patrick's coach, Allaire, like there, like he was coaching. It seemed like he was coaching every French goalies. And you got to remember, when Patrick came in the league, every kid in Quebec wanted to be a goalie. And everybody started, you know, playing like him and so forth. Then there was Marty Brodeur, you know, there was all these guys coming. You guys are right. And, you know, Carey Price came in. Here's what I might say. Oh, man, there's like six great goalies from Canada. I just think right now there's no big names because none of the guys have won a cup the last few years, too. Probably that makes a difference. Mm-hmm. And, but it might change quickly in the next 2 to 3 years.
Listen, the three of us never played professional hockey in net, but you ended up scoring 668 goals. When you watch the goaltenders today with the reverse HV, or, you know, I'm watching again last night, Shelov's on a Braden Point shot where he was on his
taped
knees,
to the post, yeah.
Where he was on his knees well before the puck left his stick, I'm sitting there going, it would have been nice to shoot a couple of goalies that looked like they were 4'2" when I played. They all stood up. Luke, do you see that as one of the top scoring wingers in the history of our game? Do you see what I see, or am I making this up?
I think if today, with the technology of the sticks, which is totally different than when we played, I think if you're smart and you really practice your shot, and you can start picking not necessarily the tight corner, but like an area, like a quarter of the net here and there, and you constantly aim for that, the minute you have time, you have better shot, because there's set positions on goaltending. Mm-hmm. And it's sometimes there's a couple of spots that are really hard, but they're playing the odds. It's like pitching, you know, they're playing the odds. It's almost the data tells you that. And it's, you know, so if you can hit the spot, you score. And they're not big holes, but you got to hit them. And I think the technology of the sticks have changed. So if you practice it enough, you should be able to pick those spots and get there.
Well, nobody picked them finer than you during your career, man. So appreciate your time, Luke. Good luck tonight, man, okay?
All right, thank you. Great talking to you guys.
Yeah, thanks for your time. Appreciate
it. That is the great Lucky Luke Robitaille.
Yeah, he could shoot it, man.
So we got a couple of minutes left in our Leaf Hour, and I found it fascinating to listen to Luke talk about the success that he had early, mm-hmm. and how you're wrapped up into finding your spot and
getting that first contract,
setting up your contract, and all of that, and then you kind of figure out later that, you know, is it conducive to winning as a team? And I'm sitting there going, he's also talking about the Toronto Maple Leafs.
He is, and it's funny because I had that thought too. And if you look at their lineup, you can pretty clearly assess what most guys' priorities would be. Nick Robertson's, what are his priorities?
Establish himself.
Yes, he's trying to become an NHLer. He wants a contract. He wants permanence. You know, McMahon, Holmberg, those guys don't have – they're playing to stay in the league. That's what they're playing for. You know, Matthew Knies, he's playing for a money deal. He's playing for his first one. It's those big guys, the core four who have been here, who should have turned the page now, right? Who should
–
it's like, okay, y'all been paid, been in the playoffs. All of a sudden, you start looking at the sands of the hourglass of your career and going
– But he also spoke of being a player that all of a sudden had to, you know, quote-unquote, betterment of the team.
Mm-hmm.
And chip the puck out.
Yeah.
Get it in deep. Well, don't turn it over.
And I liked him saying sometimes you just don't make a play. You just hang on to it because there's nothing there.
And that's where you're hoping or assume that Matthews, Nylander, Marner, and Tavares are, especially up front, that they have now realized that 60 goals, 70 goals, 50 goals, no one cares, no one cares.
No one will care if you don't win. And so, you know, Pacioretty's at that point of his career. Riley is for sure. Tanev is for sure. You know, OEL's one. McCabe would be there. Like, they've got guys who you think, okay, this is a team that should prioritize winning. Obviously, not everyone is there in their career, but there's enough guys for the Leafs that should be. We should see that in their play this year.
So the LA Kings, again, coming off Monday night's 8-7 loss to the Ottawa Senators, where Darcy Kemper stayed and remained in the game, which I found interesting. I also found interesting that he is now out day to day with an injury, and
a bruised ego.
And I can't but think of Steve Alakette telling me that
some guys just don't want to do it on a night that might get lit.
Just don't want to go back in there after something that maybe bothered him on Monday outside of whatever ails him.
You're like, I'm sorry, Austin Matthews has not scored and he's extra hungry at home. It's like, I think I'm in pain. I think I'm in physical pain right now. Check in with me on the weekend.
Yeah, I think there's probably something to that. And I really, what having Valaket on as a guest regularly has done for me is just, I look at everything cynically when it comes to goaltending. Like, I just think about it being like,
I don't know if you have to go that far.
Well, from his perspective, it does
change the way you look at the position now.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, as players, every year, we've all had goalies. We've all said they're a little different. They're a little goofy. There's times when you want to talk to them, times when you want to leave them alone. But, you know, and then you form the conclusion as a player, do I feel better with him in the net or the other guy?
Yeah.
And we can all share that quietly or with a teammate on a bus or something like that. Mm. But outside of that, you never really went any deeper to say, you know, maybe the guy's just protecting his save percentage tonight.
Yeah. No, that didn't come up. But was there not always consensus about which goalie everyone wanted in the net? Like, were you on any teams?
But it was always kind of skewed or suggested by your team prior to even starting in the season. You know who was number one or who was the backup and how the starter needed to truly lose his position or lose the trust of the team and then where it left you.
Yeah.
And listen, I don't know if Kemper's going to be that guy. We just heard from Luke talking about how much they needed a goalie. Is Darcy Kemper that guy for LA? Are you sold?
We'll see. No, I'm not sold. Before we go to break, Leafs have not started in the first 10 games. They've had the chance to get 20 points. They've not done better than 12 out of 20 points the past three seasons.
Mm.
You know, as a show, would like them to have a better start. It's a big game for them tonight.
They're all big. Sammy had the Oilers mathematically eliminated if they lost last night.
That's right.
They won their must win. They listened to the show. They knew. They won their must win.
We'll get into more of that.
Ray was there, too, so he called the game, so he'll have that.
Perfect. That is Ray Ferraro, ESPN hockey analyst, former National Hockey Leaguer. Will join us next on the National Hour. Do not move. The Real Kipper and Bourne Show.